He waved Felix off as the gyrocopter swept over the dwarf's head and around. Felix could see that the beastmen too were standing off, unwilling to interfere in their champion's battle, or simply too afraid to do so, and for that Felix didn't blame them. The defenders on the other side of the bridge were not nearly so shy, firing from the cover of the castle with pistols and bows, and pitching dozens of beastmen into the chasm to their distant dooms. Bullets rattled off the Chaos Warrior's broad shoulders like coins flung at a steam tank. Felix even saw one mark a direct hit on the champion's fiery red cheek, only to ricochet off in a welter of sparks and shave the side of Gotrek's scalp. Gotrek roared, blisters popping up across his head, and struck a wild upward arcing blow with his axe. A pulse of sapphire bathed the half-ogre's face, and time seemed to hold its breath. Felix watched as the half-ogre managed to twist, pull himself out of the way, and then slam his elbow joint into the back of Gotrek's neck as the slayer stumbled across his body. The Chaos Warrior then avoided Gotrek's backswing as if he had read the dwarf's mind, and in the same fluid motion hauled Gotrek back across him by the roots of his crest and punched the hilt of his sword into the slayer's nose. Blood spattered the warrior's bare fist where it boiled. Gotrek staggered and yelled like a drunk, the Chaos Warrior shoving him back and hitting him again, hard enough this time to snap the slayer's face around and lump him to the ground. Could Max have been wrong, after all? Was Felix witnessing Gotrek's long-overdue doom at last? The half-ogre looked up and smirked as Felix bore down. Felix saw something in his eyes, a kind of recognition, anticipation even. Without thinking about what he was doing, Felix pushed down the stick to accelerate and squeezed on the trigger as though he meant to crush the stick in his bare hands and tear it from the gyrocopter's cockpit. His concerns over the weapon's functionality were erased in a jet of superheated steam that hissed above Gotrek's recumbent form and struck the Chaos Champion's armored torso. The warrior and the bridge behind him disappeared under a wave of steam, the beastmen on the far side screaming in agony as the blast from the steam cannon boiled them alive. Felix held the trigger down until the gyrocopter had swept over the bridge again and was banking back around. Steam lifted from the iron bridge to reveal several blistered bodies. The Chaos Warrior stood amongst them with cracked armor and furnace-red skin, turning towards Felix and raising a hand as if to beckon him down. Behind him, Gotrek sat up unsteadily, brushed a hand through his scorched crest, and spat a gobbet of blood off the side of the bridge. Felix swore. It looked like he was going to have to land. He would have to... The bewildering array of controls before him expanded to fill his view. He regarded it with a sinking feeling. "Ah," spoke the dry voice of his subconscious, "we appear to have uncovered a fundamental gap in our knowledge of gyrocopter operation." Teeth gritted, he angled the gyrocopter's nose down until the muzzle of the steam cannon was centered on the half-ogre's chest. The Chaos Warrior spread his arms as if inviting another try. The champion had been able to predict and counter Gotrek's every move, but now he just stood there, as Felix's flying machine powered towards him. Gotrek roared for Felix to turn aside, and then, when it dawned on the slayer what Felix was planning, grabbed his axe off the ground and ran for the courtyard. He threw himself to the ground and covered his head under his arms. The Chaos Warrior merely grinned. Felix could only assume that this course was too mad even for one touched by the dark powers to imagine. Counting his luck that he'd been too distracted with steering to properly strap himself in, Felix waited until the last moment and then leapt from the cockpit. Felix's flying body barreled over the warrior's head. The champion roared in disbelief for the second before the gyrocopter crashed through him, driving him down into the bridge like a nail struck by a hammer. The gyrocopter's fuselage crumpled as it ground into the iron edifice, rotor blades shearing off one by one. The ancient structure squealed under the punishment. Felix hit the ground, intending to roll, but instead landing on his back and bouncing clear as the vehicle's fuel tank exploded, swallowing the bridge in a massive fireball. Felix kept his head buried as bits of metal peppered his mail, uncovering his face only as the fireball roared itself out to reveal a mangled ruin of blasted iron in its wake. its final scream ringing in his ears. Felix staggered up and moved towards the torn mess that projected from the near side of the chasm. Beastmen raged impotently on the opposite side, a kaleidoscope of animal faces and whining noise. Felix blinked and covered his ears, but neither seemed to help. He swayed on his feet. That calm, forever helpful inner voice advised him that he had probably taken a blow to the head and should sit down. He groaned. Slim chance of that. A tattooed hand clung to a spear of metal. The flesh looked ancient, splotched with liver spots and faded ink, but a gnarled old oak had never held the earth between its roots more tightly. The warrior was still alive. Where did the chaos gods find these champions? The man's feet kicked over an abyss. The strands of his long grey mane tapered and burned. The bridge creaked alarmingly as Felix stepped onto it and drew his sword.
Your doom is foretold, the warrior snarled,
swinging his free hand for a better hold that wasn't there. His face was one of cold contempt, but his accent was familiar, similar to those of the barbarous horse tribes that plagued the steppe between the world's edge and the mountains of Morn. Felix had been given cause to rue their horsemanship and suicidal bravery more than once during his near-fatal journey to the lands of the Far East.
The Dark Master will allow only one victor here. If I had a penny for every doom I'd been promised, then I'd be High King of the Dwarfs by now.
Gotrek stomped carelessly onto the bridge stump. There was a juddering squeal, and the Chaos Warrior's handhold pitched him ever further towards oblivion. Gotrek raised his axe two-handed over the warrior's wrist.
I am a favorite of the gods, Painted One. No weapon touched by fire in its making can harm me.
Is that right?
Gotrek brought his enormous axe to his one good eye, as though considering testing the champion's words, then stamped his heel onto the warrior's fingers. Bones crunched, but no pain showed on the warrior's face, just a flicker of defiance in his human, seeing eye, as Gotrek ground his foot forward and kicked out, pushing the Chaos Warrior's broken hand out into empty air. The man flailed in hard-faced silence, a fierce lament going up from the beastmen as they rushed like stampeding cattle for the ledge to watch their champion fall. But not once did the warrior scream. Felix held the man's gaze, then watched him disappear. Several seconds later, a final bang from the bottom of the gorge startled him from his vigil. Gotrek put a heavy hand on his shoulder. Felix suspected it was less about offering comfort than it was borrowing a little support. The slayer's jaw was blue, his face was bleeding, and Felix didn't like to think how close his former companion had just been to death. If he had been a minute slower in coming to Gotrek's aid, if he had acted differently in just the slightest way, then it would probably be the both of them down there at the foot of the mountain now. The very idea offended him in a way he could not adequately explain, even to himself. It was a feeling. The Slayer's doom was coming. Of that Felix had never been more certain. But whenever and however it came, he was convinced that it would be an act that shaped the outcome of the end times, for good or ill. Gotrek found strength to hawk up a gobbet of phlegm and send it arcing across the chasm towards the beastmen stranded on the far side. It fell well short, but it seemed to give the dwarf some pleasure.
If Macason should ask, he said,
the burning wreckage that lay strewn all over the courtyard glittering in his one good eye,
we'll tell him it was an accident.
Kargash Fell lay broken on the rocks. Beastmen, beaten into still, submissive shapes, were draped over the mountainside, their bloodied bodies glittering with bits of metal in the narrow shaft of light. The break in the chasm, coming far above after what looked like leagues of sheer mountainous black, looked like a mouth, and Kargash Fell felt as though he had been swallowed by some mythical beast. How could this have happened? He was the fire of Zar, the eagle of Morn, the plague of Yusak, and the delighter in blood. He had slaughtered demons and champions by the hundred over decades he had long lost count of. The Dark Master had chosen him for the destruction of his enemy. His prophetess had guided his sword. He bared his teeth, conquering the weakness that would have him scream at the broken bones that simple action upset, and tried to rise. He would not fail.
Be still, half-ogre. Your servitude is done.
Morzana crouched over him, her claws pushed lightly upon his breastplate like a child seeking to hold down a bull. With a coarse groan, Kargashfell dropped back onto his bier of rocks. He tightened his eyes for a moment and snarled.
You saw this. You knew how this battle would end. And you let me fight anyway. Why?
The prophetess smiled sadly. Her eyes glittered softly under the distant light.
When you understand that, you will know what it means to tie your destiny to one as mighty as Belakor's.
Kargashfell tilted his head back to face the light. As a youth, he had once scaled a mountain this high, and almost as steep, to raid an eagle's nest for an egg to present to his father. Even then his feats had been legend. It was an almost impossible climb up, or down.
You are not here,
he said simply.
Your mind dreams the ultimate dream, terror of the East. But I am here with you.
The woman spoke with a genuine sorrow.
Such is my gift.
I will not beg for my life.
You are brave. You deserved a more caring master.
The woman glanced to the deep shadows where beastmen lay like basking birds on the rocks. A figure whispered out of the darkness. His feathered robes fluttered and chimed in a breeze that Kargashfell could not feel. His bone clogs struck the earth with a rhythm eerily reminiscent of the one played on funerary sticks for the passing of Kamgin Lastborn.
You gave your life for the Dark Master, said Nagui,
headdress rustling as he crouched. His weathered face was wide with awe.
All the tribes speak of your sacrifice. They will serve to the last man, as will I. Forgive me, warlord, that I did not see until now.
No,
Kargashfell snarled, for the first time in his life seeing with the clarity of a dead man. He had been used until he was useless, and now it was the turn of his people.
Take my sword. Lead the people to Middenheim, and the horde of Archaon as you asked of me. The tribes are not the Dark Masters to destroy.
Ignoring him, Nagui rose and turned to face Morzana. The shaman bowed his head and handed her his staff. Glass beads and bright blue feathers abased themselves around its eagle skull tip as she wrapped her claws around it.
Obey me!
You are speaking to a ghost, half-ogre. He cannot heed you.
With that, Morzana whipped her claws across the shaman's throat. Air escaped in a hiss, bubbling through the rush of blood that, despite his words of consent, Nagui sought instinctively to staunch. His dimming eyes found those of his warlord. Blood spurted between his fingers as he tried to work his tongue, but somehow Kargashfell heard every word.
You did this!
The blood on Morzana's hands was turning black and rising off her like smoke. A similar substance was gushing out of Nagui's throat and mouth, enwrapping his body like a shroud and lifting it off the ground on huge bat-like wings. The deep laughter of the blackest of gods rippled through the hardening cloud.
The airship of the dwarfs is swift, said Morzana,
voice strained with the effort of channeling the primeval horror she would unleash upon the world.
But the wrath of Belakor has no limit.
Chapter 12. Flight. The wide leather chair aboard the Bridge of Unstoppable was more comfortable than any bed Felix had ever lain in. At least it certainly felt like it just then. The vibrations of the deck plate seemed to massage the aches from his body. The low hum of the engines was a lullaby. The waywhips of cloud struck across the forward window felt like the airborne equivalent of drawing a blanket over one's head. Even the bickering of the dwarfs felt soothing in its familiarity.
"This isn't the way to Middenheim,"
said Gotrek, standing directly in front of the window with his arms across his chest and glaring belligerently into the clouds.
"Well, that's 'cause we're going to Karazakarak,"
Mackayson snapped back. He had his coat buckled and the fur-lined collar pulled up. His goggles had been pulled down over his eyes, and he gripped the wheel with thick, fingerless leather gloves, standing on tiptoes in order to see over Gotrek's shoulders. What they both hoped to see through such thick grey cloud, Felix couldn't imagine.
"You didn't have enough fuel to reach the World's Edge Mountains, and you certainly don't now you've got a belly full of men to weigh you down."
"At least I have Yenless Gyrocopter to worry about,"
said Mackayson, with a sideways tilt of that fierce, goggled head towards Felix.
"But if you can get us to Middenheim without a compass, then I'm all ears."
Gotrek snorted.
"I am a compass."
"I know you think so, but you really aren't."
Sensing an argument with no quick resolution, and that Felix could not seem to trouble himself with the outcome of, he moved his gaze over Unstoppable's bridge. Dwarf engineers moved purposefully between stations, arguing quietly in Khazalid. One had a section of deck plate off and appeared to be applying solder to the steering shaft, even as Malachi flew. Dwarfs were never the most extroverted with their emotions, but they all looked worried to Felix.
"How are you feeling?" said Max.
The wizard stood over him, unhooded. Bone-grey flecks silvered his hair and beard, his colourless flesh creased with concern.
"I should ask you that."
"I was a wizard of the light," said Max,
smiling for the first time in an age.
"That was not the first demon I have been called upon to banish, although it was certainly the strongest. I am fine, Felix, as I see you are. I suggest you get some rest now, while you are still able."
Felix rubbed his eyes and yawned.
"Gustav and the other men? Did they make it aboard?"
"Yes. Malachi was ready to leave them behind, but by destroying the bridge, you bought time to evacuate the fortress. You're a hero."
"You get used to it," Felix muttered drowsily.
"Felix, It's coming together, don't you see? Do you remember the dream I told you about in which I was flying?"
It took Felix a moment to respond. His lids hung heavily over his eyes, and his own body felt like a ponderous, distant thing.
"Didn't we all die in that dream?"
He was asleep before Max could answer. Tall, slender pines rose out of the snow like the bars of a cage. A broken wind plucked the strings of the spider's webs that hung between the boles, trapped dew dazzling like jewels with reflected light. Felix's presence here in this boreal wood disorientated him only for a moment. Then he drew his cloak tightly about himself and blew on his gloved hands. A red squirrel, bound in a silk cocoon, hung from a branch, turning gently in the breeze. Felix's breath misted in front of him, decorating the lattice of delicate webs strung up across the trail. His hand strayed to the hilt of his sword. The forest was dark and eerily quiet. The only sound to intrude upon it was the crunch of snow under his boots, and those of his companion.
"Hurry along there, young Felix. Snorri thinks he saw something up ahead, and he doesn't want it to get away."
"What are we looking for?"
The hugely muscled dwarf turned around and shrugged. He was bigger even than Gotrek, a little shorter but broader at the shoulder, with arms thick enough to grapple down a charging bull in each hand. Tattoos covered his bulk. His short beard was dyed red, but in place of a slayer crest, a line of nails with colourfully painted heads had been hammered into his skull. He pawed at his cauliflower ear, abashed.
"Snorri was hoping you remembered. His head feels funny."
Felix's breath caught as he noticed the horrible red scar that split the middle of the slayer's forehead from the bridge of his nose to the base of his crest of nails. It looked like someone had hewn into his skull with an axe. For a moment, Felix had the sickening memory of Snorri Nosebiter on his knees, staring up with a face flooded with tears to the star-metal axe coming for his shame.
This is the Shirokish,
came a lilting female voice in his mind.
Your path was laid here.
Felix shook off the feeling with a shiver, a Snorri shrugged and carried on. The troll slayer hefted his axe and hammer and peered into the trees. Felix drew his sword as silently as he could. He glanced up, convinced he had heard a faint chittering from that direction. The branches swayed, flecking his bare cheeks with snowflakes. A bird, he thought, though he could not remember seeing one.
Did you hear something?
Snorri turned his open face upwards and gave a whoop of joy. A second later, a huge, dusky-shelled monstrosity was dropping from the canopy, pinning the dwarf to the ground under its mass. Its 8 fur-frilled legs were segmented and encased in dark red chitin. Enormous black eyes glared at Felix from an armored polyp of clacking fangs that dripped with digestive venom.
Help, Snorri, Felix! Its feet tickle!
Came Snorri's muffled yell, followed by a crunch as of a hammer bashing through the giant spider's chitinous underbelly. The spider squealed and scurried sideways, a treacle-like spatter dappling the ground beneath it. Snorri ran after it with his axe raised, only to be thrown into a tree by a swinging foreleg. Loose snow dolloped from the branches to bury him to the elbows. Felix raised his sword as the spider scuttled around on the spot to face him. It hissed, mouthparts scissoring menacingly. He glanced sideways at Snorri, the old dwarf whistling the tune to a dwarf mining song as he dug himself free. Felix rolled his eyes in disbelief, wondering what it was about this situation and this idiot slayer that made his heart ache the way it did. Through breaks in the trees, he saw more giant spiders scuttling towards them with a hideous clicking sound. Felix spun around. They were coming from every direction. Desperately, he looked around for a more defensible spot.
Snorri, what's that?
Felix pointed into the woods. Just visible in the gloom, its mossy outline swallowed up by the forest, was a cottage. Its wattled pine walls were dingy, its roughly thatched roof pierced in several places by the branches of the forest canopy and tangled with glittering silver webs.
This way, Snorri! We can hold them off in there!
Before Felix realized what he was doing, he was barging past his spluttering companion and into the trees. A spiked-shelled horror lunged from the undergrowth, and he veered to put a sturdy pine between them, lashing out on instinct at another as it came scrambling down the trunk and sending a chip of chitin flying from its mandibles as he ducked beneath it and ran on. From the unsubtle roars and the splintering of chitin, he gathered that Snorri was crashing after him. With an inchoate cry of his own, Felix charged into the clearing, and then stopped. There had been dozens of spiders here. Where were they? Heart hammering, he lowered his sword in confusion and looked over the dismal cottage that stood alone now in the silence of the wood. Warmth leached from his chest and he shivered as though a ghost had just passed through him. He turned around, dizzied by a wave of relief as he spotted Snorri. The bodies of dozens of giant spiders lay amongst the boles of the trees and scattered like tree stumps over the clearing, upturned with their legs curled over their bellies. The troll slayer swayed on his feet and chuckled. His body was riddled with bites, and pinkish froth was coming out of his mouth. He spotted Felix and made a gurgling sound, shaping to throw his hammer at him, only to accidentally toss it behind his back and fall into a giggling heap on the ground. Felix tried to go to him, but the air around him was suddenly too dense to move through, like something from a nightmare, blurring the trees and the cottage until all he could see was Snorri and the woman who settled over him in a rustle of black skirts. She put her hand around Snorri's throat, dribble running through the dwarf's beard and over her fingers, before she removed her hand and took his giant palm instead, scratching her nails along the palm lines and uttering a sing-song chant. Felix felt the hairs on his arm stand on end and a shiver run through him. He recognized the voice as the one which had spoken to him just moments earlier. The woman was working magic.
You should have died today, Snorri Nosebiter, but I will not allow it. You slaughtered my guardians, you intruded on my seclusion, and you imperil my very soul should my master find what I do to you now.
She hissed, a strange kind of smile on her lips, as a nail dug a new branching line into his palm and drew a trickle of blood. An arc of something magical flared from the droplet and crackled over her knuckles.
The doom you seek shall elude you until the day that I decree. It will not come for many years, long enough for you to suffer. And when you are whole again, when those you most love surround you again, then you shall have a death that brings you nothing but pain. This is your curse.
She smiled sadly.
A gift worthy of a slayer. You will have the mightiest doom.
Felix watched transfixed as the woman redrew the palm lines in blood. She looked up from the moaning dwarf, treating Felix to a conspiratorial smile as the power to rewrite destiny flashed in her lavender-pale eyes. Her appearance was painfully familiar to him, and yet wrong in every measurable way. Her back was bent, her hands unsteady as if from a wasting frailty at odds with the force crackling from two long, almost claw-like nails. Her grey hair was tied back with a pin. Her face was kindly but sad. She was clothed in layered skirts of black silk, decorated with coloured shards of chitin and glass beads. It was his mother, Renata. But it wasn't. The voice and the eyes were both wrong, as were the strange clothes. His mother had always hated black. The only time Felix had seen her wear it had been for her journey to the Garden of Moor. "This is the second time you've tried to appear to me as my mother. Why?"
"I never had a mother,"
the old woman replied, skin darkening and hair growing paler as she spoke.
"But I had a father who loved me more than the world. I remember being surrounded by people who cared for me."
She looked at Felix strangely, colours lapping at the purple of her eyes, until Felix could no longer be certain what colour they were. Small horns began to push through hair that was now completely white, and shone like the face of the moon.
"I have felt the kindness of strangers, and have tried in my own way to show the same for others."
A final burst of power blasted Snorri's hand from the woman's clutches. It lay steaming in the snow, the dwarf mercifully unconscious, with a look of vacant dread scrawled across his features. Revulsion filled Felix like bile from a ruptured gut. Was it even possible for a mortal being to possess such world-changing power? This woman had altered Snorri's fate. Whatever doom he might have had, she had taken from him, to instead see his life end underneath Gotrek's axe. His mind reeled with the implications. If Gotrek was merely responding to the tugged strings of this old hag's web, then was he still culpable for his friend's death? Felix shook his head sharply. Gotrek had still been the one with a choice to make. No hand but his had struck the final blow. "I would hate to be the beneficiary of your unkindness."
"Your friend Max always believed that you were being guided by a greater power."
She spread her hands demurely. Each finger ended with a sharp black claw.
"He is powerful and wise, and your meetings with him over the years have been more than fortuitous."
Felix's brow knotted as he fought to order his thoughts. "You were the sorceress that Max spoke of back at the Dwarfhold. Why would you help with one hand and then loose a demon on us with the other?"
"Have you not at times sympathized with some of those your companion is compelled to slay? But it is not sympathy. I do what I must for whom I must, for even my master cannot see as clearly as I do. I have watched over you for a long time, Felix, guided you through the choices you must make and the allies you would need come the final hour. It was my magic that staved off old age long enough for you to reach it, and my summons in your dreams that called you back from the Far East in time to shape it. Your friend's death was necessary, as was the manner of it. It tethered Gotrek to you in a bond of grief, and only together can you achieve what I alone know that you must."
"You had no right," Felix breathed, his thoughts swirling over every loss and tragedy in his life, seeing them for the first time through the retrospective prism of fate. as this strange seeress might have seen them since before he was even born. Had Kirsten, his first great love, died in a goblin raid because he would in a heartbeat have left the Slayer to be with her? Was it more than mere serendipity that had brought Felix into possession of Caragul, a weapon that had saved his life on countless occasions, and then seen the Templar order to whom it rightfully belonged crushed under a beastman invasion? Felix clenched his teeth. How very convenient. Had it even been this woman's urgings that had led Ulrika into damnation, simply so that she might one day, decades hence, reunite him with Gotrek? His hands bunched into fists, arms shaking with emotion. There were tears in his eyes as he spoke. How dare you? You're talking about my life as if I was just a character in a play. In your play. But it's my life. Those weren't your decisions to make.
You and I both walk in the shadow of others, beings of great destiny, and we both must do things we abhor to see those destinies realized.
She gestured to Snorri's recumbent form, as if to demonstrate her point, and Felix gasped at the discovery that the body was no longer Snorri's. His beard was longer and darkly red, his one eye rolled up into its socket. Blood speckled his tattoos and formed a spreading pool under his enormous chest. Felix stared at the dwarf's face, praying, despite the visceral certainty that it was hopeless, to see breath dimple the blood in which lay his nose and his limp hanging mouth. Felix put his hand over his mouth to keep from being sick. Without the slightest transition to alert Felix to the change, the body had become Gotrek's. The Slayer was dead.
Why are you showing me this?
It is not for me to decide what you see,
the woman answered, seemingly perplexed that Felix would even ask.
It is your future, not mine.
This is not my future, said Felix, unable to remove his eyes from the body.
Gotrek's chest had been torn open, savaged as if by a wild animal or a demonic creature. It would have taken a monster of extraordinary strength and power to inflict such injuries on Gotrek. Felix felt as though that should probably alleviate his pain, but it didn't.
I won't allow it.
You are powerless against the opponent that awaits you in Ghazad Drengazi, Felix. And Gotrek's passing will be the doom of this world.
She crouched beside the fallen Slayer and passed her hand across his face, closing the lid of his unseeing eye. Then she looked up at Felix.
But it may be enough to save the next.
Felix shivered and closed his eyes, hoping this woman and her visions would disappear and he would wake up. It was clear now that this was a bad dream of some prophetic sort, and find himself again on the bridge of Unstoppable, with Gotrek alive and well beside him.
Some are tied to their fates, the seeress went on. Beings like Gotrek are rocks. Immovable, stepping stones towards a certain future. But you...
She rose, turned and spread her arms, tilting her head back to gaze towards a vaulted ceiling where golden red runes glimmered like fireflies on a hot night by the banks of the Aver. There was no sign that there had ever been a forest. The floor was tiled with slabs of white stone, each one marked in the centre by a vengeful-looking rune. It was dwarf-made, but more ancient than any dwarf hold he had ever seen. A terrible power dwelt here. Even through the filter of another's vision, he could feel it in every rock and rune.
This will happen because I have seen it. What comes after is yours to claim.
What does that mean?
It means you have a choice to make, Felix Jaeger. Will you stand by the Slayer to the end? Knowing that it will mean his death? Or will you leave him here in the fortress of the first Slayer?
She pointed to Gotrek where he lay.
And let the slim hope of a better future die with him.
The woman looked up sharply and bared teeth like tiny daggers in a snarl.
It is time for you to go. Awaken. Warn your companions if you are able.
What is it? Said Felix. The fear of whatever could make an individual of this seeress's obvious power nervous enough to penetrate the swirl of questions that filled his mind. I don't even know where the place you're talking about is. The golden runes glimmered to darkness. Shadows closed around the great pillars of stone. There was a form to them, of sorts, like being captured inside a pair of gigantic black wings.
Wake up, Felix. He is coming for you.
Felix groaned as he opened his eyes. It had become something of a habit, a preemptive measure ingrained over the last few months into his subconscious. But there didn't appear to be anything particularly untoward awaiting him on Unstoppable's bridge. The first thing that struck him was the quiet. Most of the engineers who had been bustling between the stations had since departed, to leave the handful who now operated the various ancillary bridge functions that Felix had never quite managed to understand. They stood at their posts in silence, moving only occasionally to adjust a dial or flick a switch. The engines hummed on a low, resonant register. Max stood by the entrance hatch, leaning against the circular frame with his arms loosely crossed and staring into space. Gotrek sat in another of the swiveling command chairs on the opposite side of the bridge to Felix, tending to his wounds and trying to pull what looked like glass splinters from his knuckles with his teeth. Malachi McKayson stood in brooding silence at the helm, goggles hanging around his neck, staring determinedly forward and making minute adjustments to their heading with slight turns of the wheel. That was when Felix noticed how dark it had become, the bridge lit by a cool, unnatural light that gleamed from pinprick sources that ran in tracks along the bulkheads, deck, and ceiling. At first, Felix thought that he'd slept away the entire day, and that Unstoppable now flew through the night, thus explaining the absence of the other engineers to some well-earned rest. But then he noticed the real cause. The clouds they were flying under were as black as pitched oak, tendrilous strands whipping past the viewscreen as the airship ploughed through. A feeling of unease sat in Felix's belly. He peered through the window. The peaks of the mountains were jagged, uneven teeth in the darkened landscape, like a great maw opening up to snatch them from the sky. "What's happening?" he asked. Malachi turned around at his question and gave him a serious look, as if to make sure he wasn't joking. Felix noticed that the goggles resting on his chest were smashed, owing to an incident that was probably not wholly unrelated to that responsible for the thick black eye he now wore instead, underscored by a half-moon gash that roughly traced the original position of his goggles. From across the room came a slurping sound, as Gotrek sucked in and spat out a piece of glass. The engineer glared at Felix sulkily.
"We're going to Middenheim."
Felix glanced to where Max stood, but the wizard appeared to have no complaints over the course or destination. Felix wished he could be reassured by the wizard's ambivalence.
"Just a spot of rain, Manling. It rains a lot up here in the north, if I remember."
Gotrek heaved himself up out of his chair and came stumping across to where Felix sat, nervously twitching his swivel chair from side to side. Suddenly conscious of it, he stopped. Gotrek grunted and wrapped his arms about his chest. Dark clouds and a palpable sense of chill whistled past the glass behind him.
"You sleep like a halfling. Middenheim can't be more than a few hours from here, and I was worried I wouldn't be able to wake you when we arrived."
"It's good to see you alive," said Felix without thinking. Gotrek's eye narrowed.
"Why? Should I not be?"
A vision of the Slayer dead, no, ripped apart, at Felix's feet, returned to him, and his mouth suddenly felt too dry for him to speak. He thought about what the seeress had told him about Gotrek's doom, about how it would be the doom of the world itself. She hadn't been the first to prophesy that the Slayer's demise would be the downfall of others, but this had been the most forthright and forbidding such warning he had yet been given. Perhaps it was the times. It was too easy to give credence to portents of doom when the world was already in flames. He managed to pull his thoughts from those images, watching them run like panicked horses for the familiar ground of Cat and his daughter. In his mind now, they stood not in Otto's Altdorf townhouse, but on the walls of the Faustschlag, waiting if not for him, then for some other kind of end. He liked to think that the ease with which he saw them there, this infant he had never seen in a city they had never visited, meant that there could be some truth to it. That was all he wanted. With all his heart, that was all he had ever wanted. Part of him would let the Slayer find his doom, and even join him in it if it meant that his daughter might have a future free of war. Realizing that he had been silent too long, Felix masked his disquiet behind an unconvincing smile. Alive and well, I meant. After a fight like that. Gotrek's lips pursed in thought, but he said nothing. Felix noticed the tired red glaze in the dwarf's eye. The Slayer's stamina was extraordinary, but his continuing refusal to rest was madness, even by his standards.
"Is there something you want to talk about?" Max asked softly from his position by the hatch.
Felix shivered, as if a cold beam had just been shone on his back, looking up and then quickly drawing his gaze back without meeting the wizard's eye. To Gotrek alone, he might have been moved to confess the seeress's prophecy. But not Max. The wizard thought of little but the Slayer's destiny. Had Felix told him what he had been shown, then Max would no doubt have insisted again on seeking out the mythical power of Khazad Drengazi and facing whatever fell guardian awaited Gotrek there, regardless of what the fallout for the rest of the world might be. Well, Felix planned to prove the seeress wrong. She could have told him that Grimnir's legendary fortress was home to 1,000 doughty warriors and the ancestor god himself, and Felix would still not like the price. Middenheim was hours away, and for the first time in an age, Felix and Gotrek were of one mind.
"What on Grimnir's axe is that?"
Malachi shouted, taking the wheel in his immensely strong grip and staring dead ahead through the forward window. A frisson of dread jerked Felix out of his chair like an electric shock, and he moved to stand beside the engineer. Gotrek joined him. Max bowed his head to his staff and muttered a string of words under his breath that made Felix's skin tingle. Felix looked through the thick glass of the window, his eyes widening as if forcing him to behold the monstrous black tear that seemed to be ripping open the sky in their path. In its dark core, Felix could feel the cold depths of eternity. Shreds of cloud streamed around its borders, taking on a protean show of colour reminiscent of those that the winds of magic could, when in full force, create in the northern skies. The effects it was producing on the surrounding sky were already causing the deck of the bridge to tremble, and it was getting wider.
"What is it?"
Felix yelled back, countering the sudden weakness in his knees with a steadying hand on the engineer's broad shoulders.
"Damned if I can! It's an opening to the realm of chaos," said Gotrek. "I've seen it before, once."
"Can we avoid it if we turn around?" said Felix.
"There's not enough fuel on it. If we do, we may as well just land right here."
Felix felt the hand of destiny tightening its grip. Which was the right course and which was wrong? How was he to know? He turned to Max, but the wizard had yet to reopen his eyes, the occasional turbulence shaking him against his staff.
"Hold on!"
Malachi roared, pushing forward the first of the row of levers by his right hand, and then gripping the wheel as though he never intended to release it again. The drone of the engines ramped to a higher pitch, and Felix felt a force driving him back towards the aft bulkhead. The clouds hit the window with greater speed and power, and the vortex swelled before them like a pit of despair. Felix was convinced that Malachi Mackayson had decided to fulfill his own Slayer oath right then in a blaze of pointless glory after all.
"Have you ever ridden over a tidal wave in a steamship?"
Felix's expression of horror indicated that he had not, and prayed never to.
"Turn away, and it'll keel you over. You have to guard it full ahead, and hope to all your gods you punch you to the other side."
The engineer wrenched his hand from the wheel to grab the chain that swayed in the turbulence above him and hauled down on it. Steam screamed from whistles on every deck, billowing from vents and portholes like smoke from the jaws of a dragon, as Unstoppables surged full steam ahead into the heart of darkness. As Felix watched, utterly helpless to affect his fate, a school of dark shapes began to arrow from the rift. They appeared tiny, But as they flew closer, Felix realized that to be an illusion, peddled to him by distance and the awesome scale of the vortex itself. They were flat-bodied, glassine flesh of boundless black, ray-like wings, rippling on unseen currents as they swept en masse towards the airship. As the forerunners angled past the nose of the vessel, they revealed hideous arrow-shaped mouths filled with sharp teeth and flanked by flat, dark eyes. Malachi leaned forward to catch a glimpse of the demons clawing over the gas bag above them, and scowled, his guttural curse drowned out by a burst of cannon fire as the first engineers finally reached the organ gun turrets and opened up on the swarm. Explosive bursts painted the dark skies with devastation, shredding the screaming rays to a demonic essence that dispersed into the clouds like vapor. Unstoppable's firepower was immense. It was a fortress in the skies, but the enemy were too numerous, and more just kept on pouring out of the rift, however many the gunners could banish back to the realm of chaos. An impact to the side of the gondola flung Felix sideways and would have surely sent him rolling across the deck had he not had firm grip of Macason's shoulder. A painful squeal ground through the bulkhead, and Felix's mind kindly bequeathed him images of foul demonic things raking across the bows of the gondola. He swallowed hard and tightened his grip, uncomfortably reminded that the armored vehicle in which they traveled was kept airborne by little more than the few dozen cables that connected them to the gas bag. Felix clutched the hilt of his sword in horror. That was what they intended to do. The demons meant to destroy the gas bag and drop them all to break on the mountain. A section of armor plate spun down from above and cracked against the viewscreen.
Malachi! I see them, the slicky devils!
Felix drew his sword a thumb's width from his scabbard. He wasn't nearly as helpless as being on this airship made him feel. He could still fight, and he would rather fall under a tide of claws than plummet to his doom trapped inside this iron box. He turned to Gotrek. The Slayer nodded grimly.
We'll make it, manling. Just one last fight.
Then Max's eyes snapped open. The wizard emitted a strange sound that seemed to come from the very base of his throat and placed his hand on the bulkhead. A flash of pure white light passed from his palm and into the metal, and a moment later discharged from the outer hull in a crackling arc that purged the vicinity of the demonic and blackened the view screen with the vaporous effluvium of their annihilation. Felix almost smiled. If Max could keep them off the body of the airship, then they might just be able to ride out whatever it was that had been opened in their path.
They will keep on coming until I am too exhausted to stop them, said Max,
a mild tremor of exertion in his voice.
Gotrek is correct. Within that rift lies the realm of chaos. These are not greenskins or skaven. There will be no end to them until it is closed.
Close it, then, Gotrek growled.
Believe it or not, that is actually what I had in mind.
"What's it doing in the middle of the Empire?" said Felix.
"The encroachment of the Chaos Wastes makes such things possible," said Max.
One hand stuck to the wall and one on his staff as the turbulence shook him.
"Even so, it would demand a sorcerer of tremendous power to open something like this. Several sorcerers, most likely."
Felix thought of the seeress who had come to him in his dream. Did she possess the sort of power Max was talking about? It was frightening to imagine— But after what he had seen of her, it was impossible to consider anything else. He wished he could decide which side she was on.
Why? To keep us from Gazadrengazi.
Gotrek growled angrily.
How many times and in how many different ways do I have to tell people we're going to Middenheim? Manling!
Felix drew his sword the rest of the way.
Let's go draw them a map.
Wait! Said Max. Sealing the rift will require all of my concentration. I won't be able to aid you.
The wizard hissed and scrunched up his face as though he had just tasted something sour.
Something comes. Something dark.
They're all dark,
Gotrek roared, as Felix turned to the shattered view screen and gave a small moan of horror. Something vast had emerged from the rift, surrounded by a billowing school of lesser demons, and sending out a bow wave of abyssal dread that rocked Felix to the deepest and most securely held quarters of his soul. It was the same terror that he had felt before on the cupola, before Max had distracted its attention from him, but exponentially worse. Its sleek, powerful black form was a nightmare cut in volcanic glass. Its horns were an endless curve of damnation and despair. The demon prince dipped and soared, bat wings beating, reveling in the power of flight and the dark delight of simply being. The cannonade faltered as the dread prince flew nearer, and there was some slim satisfaction in knowing that the dwarf crew suffered the creature's aura as sorely as Felix did himself. With a pitted obsidian-black sword the length of a Reichsguard's lance, the demon leveled its challenge to those watching from the bridge, then tucked in its wings and barrel-rolled under the steaming airship. Felix didn't need to hear the words spoken to know that the demon had been calling out Gotrek, and no one else.
"He's gone for the aft hangar,"
said McKeyson, craning his neck awkwardly to peer under the cracks in the view screen to the simple setup of mirrors that granted a partial view around the top and sides of the gondola. Then he turned to Felix.
"That's where most of y'all are staying. I think young Gustav is down there."
The life drained from Felix's face.
"Gotrek! Clear the birds from the roof, Babbling. If the big one wants a taste of my axe, then he'll get it."
Felix nodded reluctantly.
"No finding a doom now."
"I'm no longer seeking a doom, Mabling, as you should well know."
"You know how these things creep up on you when you stop looking."
A slow grin spread across the slayer's brutal features. He spat on his hand and thrust it out.
"No enemy shall have my shame before we both stand upon the pinnacle of Middenheim. You already have my oath, but I will swear on it again."
Felix hesitated. That oath had been the cause of almost as much trouble and grief as the one that Felix had made long ago. But for some reason, with their long-sought goal perhaps hours away, the past didn't seem to matter. At least not that part of it. He took the slayer's ham-sized fist in his own calloused hand.
"I remember a good tavern from our last visit there. You and Snorri were sleeping off a hangover at the time, and I always wanted to go back."
For the first time, Gotrek showed no anger at the mention of that name. He shook Felix's hand solemnly. The oath was made. Now all they had to do was keep it. Chapter 13. Bellacor. Felix and Gotrek parted ways at the midsection maintenance hatch, without so much as a best of luck. Gotrek bombed on down the hallway, axe held firmly in both hands. Felix rolled his eyes, reached up to spin open the hatch to the gas bag, and then took a rung of the ladder in his left hand. As he did so, a terrific scraping sound passed through the body of the ship. Felix grimaced, more than half expecting to see a murderous black sword perforating the hull, or some winged horror scratching through the bulkhead. His ring finger rattled against the iron rung. It was a similar mix of apprehension and dread to when he had been caught below decks of the Bretonian merchantman Cecile when storms had driven the Arvik-bound vessel over the rocks that lurked beneath the Manonspore Sea. It was the same kind of helplessness, the knowledge that there was likely very little that he could do to influence his fate. It seemed to be a recurrent theme of late. The ever-present rumble of Unstoppable's powerful engines dropped in register. The low drone made Felix's teeth hum. The sense of strain was palpable, every surface shuddering with effort, as though the airship had somehow become snared on something. What they could possibly have struck up here, Felix didn't want to imagine. He thought of the rift, the one thing he had been trying not to think about since leaving the bridge. Were they too late? Could they have hit it already? Felix couldn't even begin to imagine what it would feel like to crash an airship through a vortex to the realm of chaos. And if he was completely honest, then he was hoping to live a little longer without having to find out. Just as it had been aboard that ill-fated Norsecan adventure, however, Felix could see no better alternative than simply getting on with things and trying not to think about it. No sooner had he come to that decision than the disarming sensation of gravity altering its angle of attack tipped him off balance and almost pitched him down the aft hallway. He rolled on his ankles. The whole ship lurched backwards. In panic, Felix clanged his sword hand against the ladder's side rail and held on tight to the rung as his feet were suddenly pulled from under him and his stomach dropped through them down the now steeply angled hall. The engines strained mightily. The demon prince was dragging down the airship. It was actually pulling down the entire airship. Felix walked himself hand over hand towards the safer confines of the maintenance shaft, as the deck continued to tilt and his legs swung loosely beneath him. He hoped that Gotrek had closed some hatches behind him. It was a long way down to the hangar deck otherwise. Pieces of junk machinery rolled across the tilting deck of the hangar, piling into the aft bulkhead, as a force strong enough to buckle its thick iron doors tightened its grip on the outer hull and heaved. Men and women were dragged from their nightmares to claw at the deck and scream. Gustav Jaeger's heart muscles resonated with sympathetic horror. He inserted his fingers deeper into the holes in the metal deck and snatched at the scarred hand of a bald man in an unbuckled red and green tabard as he tumbled past. The sudden fierce grip on his burnt hand caused his vision to waver, and he almost passed out from the pain. But from somewhere, he found the grit to clench his teeth and hold on. 1 minute, he'd been laying bedrolls and distributing what blankets they'd managed to salvage from the dwarf hold amongst the soldiers and families camped here in the hangar, and the next his world had been turned literally on its side. The doors gave a wrenching sound of steel being forcibly separated from steel, and a huge serrated black blade split the inch-thick bulkhead like old wood. A shriek of ice-cold black wind raced through the breach. The Hawklander in Gustav's grip screamed a garble of panicked gibberish and began to struggle. Gustav's face turned purple with agony. He couldn't hold on much longer. Pain caused his own grip on the deck plate to slip, and with a despairing cry, Gustav threw the man off. The soldier tumbled away, thumping bodily over the nose of a gyrocopter and then rolling limply towards the doors. There, the infernal sword proceeded to carve through the bulkhead like a butcher's knife through ribs, opening a long horizontal incision through which streamed a dark, misted chill and a primal dread. Metal screeched as the blade was twisted 90 degrees, carving upwards as easily as it had cut across. After cutting a track almost 12 feet long, the sword squealed around again to make a third cut, parallel to the first. Gustav clung to the deck, numbed by a combination of cold and horror, almost grateful to the throbbing in his injured hand for the affirmation that despite what he was witnessing, he remained a living, feeling, human man. The blade carved down to meet its original incision, completing a perfect rectangle. Gustav felt the temperature drop by several degrees. The back of his skull throbbed, as though the bone were being pried open from within. His wounds ached, as if the stitching on all of them had simultaneously come undone. Dark magic. He had gone his entire life without needing to learn what it felt like, but after his experiences in occupied Kislev, it felt as horribly familiar as a recurring nightmare. An explosion of onyx flame blasted in the bulkhead's eviscerated section. It thumped to the deck, and more frigid air washed in after it to reveal a shape that someone without conception of scale or the ability to feel the grip of fear might describe as man-like. The air froze in Gustav's chest, and for what felt like a fatal span of time, he couldn't breathe. In that moment, Gustav understood that everything he had experienced in Kislev and before was nothing. He could fight well enough to get by. The sense of entitlement that came with his upbringing seemed to translate well into a knack for leadership, and he knew how to carry through a plan. But he was not his uncle. He did not have what it took to fight a greater demon. The might of the chaos gods made flesh. Its clawed feet tolled on the deck like the call of midnight. Shadows scraped around its ankles, benighted children squalling for the approval of their dark master. The demon drew itself to its full height, lifting back its horned head and beating out its leathery black wings. The demon was as lithe as a panther, and though its musculature was harder than stone, it had a smooth, ephemeral quality akin to smoked glass. An 8-pointed star, the symbol of undivided chaos, shone like a crack in the void from its broad chest. It clenched its fists, muscle gliding across muscle, glorying in its own dark skin. Gustav quailed, enraptured, as the gaze of the demigod passed briefly over him. Its eyes were a bottomless black, an eternal shadow into which a man might fall, forever fall, and never, ever reach their darkest point. He had barely even noticed that the deck had leveled out, and that he was lying flat once again.
Away!
Back from the doors, Zbek!
Kolya ran against the flow of bodies with his bow unslung and in hand, the deck levelling out beneath him now that the airship's engines were no longer fighting against the might of a demon prince. He knocked an arrow to his string, and in the same unbroken action fired. The shaft disintegrated before it came within 6 inches of the demon's chest.
Svanya!
The Kislevite pulled another arrow from his quiver, then threw it aside with a fresh curse and unhitched a hatchet from his belt. He tossed it into the air and caught its haft as it spun, casting aside his bow and drawing a short, curving saber from the fur-lined scabbard at his hip. His freshly drawn hennaed forearm glittered with a faintly metallic tint as he carved a blinding sigil of practice strokes into the air. Gustav would always think of Kolya as a bowman, but he had heard his uncle describe the one-time winged lancer as something of a gourmand with weapons. Felix may not have realized it, but coming from him, that was high praise indeed. The gaunt-faced Northman's courage was infectious, and from it Gustav managed to draw the strength to stand and draw his own, longer cavalryman's sabre. Despite everything she had put him through, he longed to have Ulrika at his side again to wield that weapon now.
"Does the Oblast have a clever saying for this?"
Gustav shouted, praying by volume alone to erase the quaver that the demon had set in his voice.
"It does not," said Kolya with a faint smile and a shrug. "For my life, I cannot think why."
The demon ignored the two men utterly, looking over their heads and past those screaming for the hatchway into the corridor. It grinned like a shark and unfurled its wings, shadows bunching beneath them like extensions of its own awesome muscles, and then launched itself into the air. Gustav gasped and lowered his sword, tilted his neck back, and turned to follow its short arc to where it pounded into the metal deck like a warpstone meteor. Nearby, men and women were tossed from their feet by the shock that rattled through the walls and floor. The demon ignored them, insects too small and harmless to be worth the tiny effort of being swatted.
"You ever have feeling we are not important, friend Gustav?"
"Only every day."
An angry red glow bathed the far wall, a stark relief to outline the demon's limpid black. The demon prince laughed coldly, ominous as black ice on a frozen lake.
"You defeated a worthy pawn in Kagesh Fell, son of Gurney, but now you stand before a king."
Gotrek stood framed by the hatchway that led out of the hangar into the hall, bruised and battered, but a rock in the stream of panicked men and women running past him for the hallway. He thrust his jaw belligerently towards the towering demon prince. His axe glowed painfully bright in one massive hand, enough to force the dwarf's eyelid down to a sliver. The other he held in a back gesture towards Gustav and Kolya.
"Yes," said the demon prince. "There will be no human to save your skin this time."
Gotrek growled and brought up his axe.
"Run, Gustav,"
Kolya murmured, pointing with his axe to the pair of metal ladders leading up to the walkways above. Escape by the main hatchway meant braving the demon prince, but there were doors onto other decks up there. Gustav had explored them thoroughly when the dwarf crewman assigned to the human survivors had brought them down here. He didn't like to go anywhere with his eyes closed. Not again.
"Aren't you coming too?"
The gaunt-faced man shrugged and turned towards the main hatchway.
"Man owes you horse. What do you do?"
"I don't know,"
Gustav shouted after him.
"I never know what the hell you're saying."
Kolya turned his face half around and grinned. Gustav felt a terrible wrenching in his heart, as though it yearned to stay, as if it knew that this would be the last time it would beat in this intolerable man's company.
"You and the dwarf deserve each other," said Gustav,